Last time Dr. Franz Cronier graced our Biz News TV, he said the DA cannot support the VAT increase. 150,000 people watched that video, and the DA must have been amongst them because they haven't supported the VAT increase. And my goodness, the impact of that for the party's popularity has been huge. We're going to pick up with Franz in a moment. So the latest poll that came out yesterday, Franz, from the Institute of Race Relations, was described by Herman Pretorius as a political earthquake, with the ANC going below 30% and the DA getting above the ANC for the first time ever in all of the polls. Now, you used to be the CEO of the IRR, Institute of Race Relations, so you know that they've been polling for a long, long, long time. Is that a little exaggeration, though, to call it a political earthquake?
No, not at all. You know, like if you think back that 20 years ago, the ANC was approaching 70% of the vote. It's now below 50 and hit 40, and a few polls now that have hit it at in the 30s. The country's changing at lightning speed. But behind that remains a simple thing, that ANC voter behavior is a function of the material circumstances of people in the country. And that as long as real reform is delayed, as long as the fixed investment rate doesn't lift, and then the growth rate, and then the rate of job creation, socioeconomic circumstances are going to continue to put downward pressure on ANC support.
It's an interesting point that you raise there, because that was again the major thrust of what Herman said in his opinion of what came out of the polls, was that bread and butter issues are now trumping ideological issues. But I'd like to go into them in some detail, a little bit of detail, Franz. And let's start off with your report, which came out in February. This was the Social Research Foundation, of which you're the chair. If we have a look at this that's on the screen, the February number had the ANC, just for, so that people understand, the black line is the May 2024 election. The blue line was just after, 6 months in, the September 2024. So this was after the Government of National Unity had been well established. And then the February 2025 number, which shows the ANC dropping from 45 to 32 and the DA going up consistently from its election score around 21 to 25%. So this, at the time, was showing us a very distinct picture.
Yeah. Okay, this is what you've got to expect from polling for the next 3 years. Inside the ANC camp, let's say the 40% that they got in the election last year, about a quarter of that, so a quarter of 40%, 10% of the electorate, are voters that we've seen a crack between them and the rest of the ANC for quite some time. And that crack was, to simplify it a bit, the voters beneath the crack, the 10% of the electorate, the quarter of the ANC voters, were answering a lot of questions as an opposition voter might, but they were staying in the ANC. Why was that? Number one, they were afraid that if the ANC lost its majority, there would be complete chaos and anarchy. So they're unhappy with the ANC, but they say we're going to vote for it because otherwise the place can fall apart. After the GNUs formed, they realized that that's not happening. So that reason for keeping them in the ANC goes. The second thing they'd felt, by a margin of 7-3, so 70%, was if the DA was given a shot at governing the country, it would try and bring back apartheid or some variation of it. A function of just how toxic a lot of our mainstream media has been in inculcating that idea. But they looked at the DA in government and they saw, no, this doesn't look like they're trying to bring back apartheid. So that reason fell away. Because those reasons have fallen away, two of the key things that were keeping these very unhappy voters in the ANC have been significantly diluted. And what was therefore holding them there breaks away further. And about 10% of the electorate now is going to bounce around pretty wildly over the next 2 to 3 years as it finds a new home. And depending on the issue of the day, you're therefore going to see the ANC approaching a number of near 30%, and at sometimes hitting a number of just over 40%, as these, well, what you might at times call free agents. It's not an ideal term, but it's one we've created, bounce around. The third thing keeping them to the in the ANC is the idea of Cyril Ramaphosa. At least he's there. We can stick it out. But at the end of 2027 is an ANC conference at which he might be replaced. And if you pull him out of the ANC as well, then the three key factors that were keeping very frustrated dissident ANC voters in the ANC are removed. If at the same time as that, the economic descent, or at least the low growth status quo, is maintained, further downward pressure. Now start to think ahead of the curb a bit. Mm. Yeah, it's a very serious position that they find themselves in, Alec.
And let's move on then to the IRR's research that came out yesterday, was released yesterday. In fact, it's only being publicly released today, I think. But anyway, there it is. And if you have a look at the gray line, that's, again, repeating the national election, May 2024 numbers. The blue line was their polling, which was September, October 2024, again, just after Government of National Unity. And there's a little bump up for both the DA slight and the ANC, and a downward pressure for MK and EFF. But then this most recent polling, which happened, France, during the fracas over the budget. And that has shown that by opposing VAT, which is what you said they had to do, the DA has really pulled in a lot of support.
I mean, I think the DA also knew it had to do that. I don't think necessarily needed
anybody with a half a brain, because that would be very insulting. But surely to goodness, if your government's overspending, then you've got to stop it from overspending rather than jacking up taxes continuously.
Well, people, the data, understand? I mean, let's just flip it around. What was the ANC doing? I mean, we've got the data on it for them, that their own voters opposed tax increases by a margin, I think, of 3-1. So they effectively have, for 6 weeks, run an opposition campaign, and boldly so. And more so, the GNU's popular, as we've told you before, with the public and with ANC voters. So in aid of forcing through their tax increase, they have threatened the future of the GNU. It's completely crazy that the ANC strategy team allows this to happen. And because of that 10% of the electorate, quarter of the ANC vote, that I told you the factors holding it in have been so diluted. When you press a very unpopular tax increase and threaten a very popular governing coalition in order to do it, and you're already in that vulnerability, there you go, on your screen. That's the consequence. You're down to 30%. And continue like this, and what number the ANC ends up with in 2029, might be extremely low.
We see there's increases for MK and the EFF, who also opposed the increase in value-added tax. But look at the IFP and the Patriotic Alliance collapsing as a consequence of this. Now, we must remember this is a snapshot at a point in time, but you would have thought that their guys inside those organizations would have had more of at least a gut feel that they would be on the wrong side of this pot.
Look, the margins of error come into play here. I don't know what the IRR survey margin of error was, but
I think it's 4%.
3-4%. So that's there. Yeah. You want to see a few more data points, but there's enough here. And from what we've seen from other data. And again, it's as simple as the ANC support is sliding because it's not meeting the material circumstances of its supporters. If you promote an increase in taxation and threaten a popular governing arrangement, your support diminishes. Public opinion, as ever, very sensible, very straightforward, very pragmatic, and actually quite well informed. And yeah, those numbers there would suggest, would reinforce that again.
You've always said that, France, and there have been a lot of skeptics. You've said that South Africans are conservative, that they do pay attention to what's happening in politics, and that at some point in time they are going to vote, or not at some point in time, but they actually vote for what makes sense. Now, surely the question from the DA guys who did listen to you last time, whether they were going to do it anyway, would be, how do we keep this lead? How does the Democratic Alliance, and now that it's finally broken above the ANC, or is it all in the ANC's camp to lose or to win?
Well, I think it just, if you look from an ANC perspective, it's pretty straightforward to go back to 50% plus. They should never have been at 40%. Had they used the moment of the end of Mr. Zuma's era and the arrival of Mr. Ramaphosa to create a bit of confidence in the economy, they did the opposite, of course, particularly with regards to expropriation. And people tend to play down the expropriation thing because they're afraid to get drawn into a discussion that they oppose land reform. But the expropriation policies and legislation, even up to this point, have very little to do with land reform. But rather it's putting the state in a position where it can seize assets with impunity, should it one day choose to do so. Had they created some confidence after Ramaphosa, enough to get fixed investment right up to approaching 20%, the economic growth rate would have been 3%. And they created through Mr. Ramaphosa's era, I think on average, under 100,000 net new jobs per year. I think it's about 70,000. During Mr. Mandela and Mr. Mbeki's terms in office, the ANC in government was seeing to the creation of about 500,000 net new jobs per year. So 500,000 against less than 100,000. Had they got the growth rate up to 3%, they would have created enough jobs that today they would have had, I don't know, somewhere between 50 and 60% of the vote. Probably in the middle, they're approaching 60. Many of the dissident voters that have left the ANC for various parties, that's pained them to do so. The ANC meant a great deal to them in their lives. They'd invested a lot of their hopes for just dignity in the idea that the ANC might be successful. And it pains them not to vote for it. But the ANC has forced them out, forced its loyal, devoted followers to look for alternatives because it is so bad at meeting the material expectations of people. But even now, there's enough of that sentiment left that with a bit of pragmatism and common sense, removing policies that undermine investment in order to get, remember it goes, fixed investment, growth, jobs, a straight line. To get that back, the ANC could easily poll between 50 and 60% in the election in 2029, but you see very little evidence of that in policy. If anything, a further deeper drive into the ideas that so worry investors and cause them to turn away from South Africa, that investment persists. So from the ANC side, you might even describe it as hounding its supporters away. That persists.
Derangement is the way that it has been described by academics when you are so far away from your support base, or so far away from the messages that those who are supporting you want to give you, that you do things which are contrary to your longer-term interests. And we certainly are seeing this. But we'll talk a little bit more about the ANC in a moment. But one political leader who does appear to be in touch with his constituency is Donald Trump. As much as the mainstream media has been attacking him, I had a fascinating interview on Friday, France, with a insider from the World Trade Organization. Johan Himan had worked there for 17 years. He was very senior there. He was for 15 years before that. He was at the DTI in South Africa. And he tracked exactly what's happened in international trade for the last 30 years or so, well, since the Chinese came into the picture. where the Chinese have consistently outnegotiated the Americans. And at some point in time, something had to give. And clearly Donald Trump is the one who's giving it. But the description one's hearing of Trump by doing this is that he's lost his mind. Now, you've just been to the U.S. You've also just returned home from Europe as well. How are people on the ground there reading it? And indeed, what are we to take from your very practiced mind on exactly what's going on?
Yeah, it's interesting vis Africa broadly, because the response of a lot of Africa to Mr. Trump's trade moves was read by the Americans as being very positive. Good relations with the DRC, good relations with Rwanda, Mozambique, others. South Africa standout, case of the opposite. I mean, even little Lesotho, which apparently no one can find on a map, even little Lesotho was spoken of in favorable terms. The Zimbabweans had reached out to say, hey, let's do a deal. But opinion on South Africa and its approach wasn't good. South Africa at this time does not have a single senior diplomat in America capable of talking to anyone senior. My understanding is that the United States would be delighted to come to terms with South Africa and strike some sort of deal, whatever form that may take. And I think from South Africa's perspective, that's very important, even just from the ANC's perspective. For the ANC to survive, let's just talk about America from the ANC perspective, do something unusual. To survive, because that's where it's at now. The rate of fixed investment must lift very quickly. Now, the United States has the economic firepower, and the dollar at this morning, probably again, just under 19 to 1, goes a long way. The potential, therefore, of interesting the U.S. in South African infrastructure, minerals, the like, as part of its broader approach to Southern Africa is immense. But you don't even have a single person there who over recent weeks has been able to talk to anyone in that regard. I think many of the delegations that have gone to from South Africa have misread the room. There's no point in going in this climate and talking about South Africa's history or that it deserves help and support. As one quite senior chap put it to me, we don't care. Go home to these delegations, come back when you've got a plan or a deal that you want to do with us. There is strategic importance in South Africa, though, for the U.S. It's one of the three points that anchors Simonstown, anchors control of the Indo-Pacific. The sea channel around the Cape is very, very narrow. After the fall of Singapore and Hong Kong in the Second World War, we saw massive lift in sea traffic around the Cape. We've seen the same thing now because of what the Houthis are doing at the gateway into the Red Sea and then Suez beyond that. But South Africans can't be complacent because the Americans have fantastic fallback positions in Southern Africa. Angola is hosting the U.S.-Africa Business Summit. It's not involved in some absurd diplomatic spat that it couldn't possibly succeed in winning. There are very interesting plans afoot for minerals exchanges in Southern Africa that South Africa is not necessarily going to be part of. One of our great interests is a future transatlantic alliance, and we would love that alliance to be between the US, the UK, Argentina, and South Africa. But you're told no way. The alliance, those countries, and Angola, that's the alliance.
Are we getting cut out? We're getting cut out of a very potentially very lucrative. partnership.
If you're, you know, and people may have the views that they have personally of Mr. Trump if they wish to, but there are hard realities. And if you spend your time insulting him and have no one in America to talk for you, then I don't know if you could say they've cut you out. You've cut yourself out of the arrangement. And we spoke earlier about the ability the ANC has had to bring its own support down to 40%. And now below that, with the VAT thing. It's the same thing, Alec. This VAT thing is as nuts as the way that the relationship with the US is being maintained. Just if, even from the narrow perspective of the ANC's own survival, it rolls the dice on that with things like that and how the relationship with the US is being maintained.
France, before we move off this, Mzibisi Jonas, who endeared himself to South Africans when he stood up against the Guptas, has now been made the special envoy to the United States. But of course, stuff has surfaced where he was very insulting of Donald Trump. It does appear as though we might be shooting ourselves in the foot again.
Yeah. I believe that stuff was circulating in the US last night already. And that will make it difficult in the current environment to be effective. I mean, the advice we've given on to the South Africans as well is you need people there that would be popular at Mar-a-Lago on a Saturday evening. That's what you need if you want to fix this relationship. And anything short of that is going to be difficult to do. One thing I will tell you though that I think the Americans are making a mistake. And there's a misread of the environment. It's actually an old leftist misread of the environment that, in as far as their approach to the Afrikaners do this, there's a suggestion implicit in their policies that the conflict in South Africa is a conflict between black and white, essentially. You know, that's an old Marxist idea. There's the struggle between black and white. The one must dominate the other. And a point we tried to make very strongly, and I think I've got a hearing, is that that's wrong. That South Africa is a much more complex society than that now. And that it's essentially a conservative society that leans center-right. And that there is a conservative majority in South Africa, black and white, who share the same values with each other, a point we've long made on your show. And more than that, when you look at those values, they're not far off the values that Trump supporters hold in America. And that the Americans, if they persist in the view that South Africa is a conflict between black and white, with as far as their policies imply that, with different values, one, they can do a lot of damage here because they can invest that view in the country itself because they have such influence. And secondly, they miss the opportunity to build fraternal ties with a country and the majority of its people who, from a values perspective, are not very far removed from it. So we did stress that point, I think, strongly, and I think it's very important to do so because it's correct. It's right. South Africans do lean center-right in the mud. And it's not a comment of saying that Afrikaners aren't important. We made the point, for example, on farm killings, that in our judgment, the data isn't perfect enough to do it. We actually made the point in the Financial Times this week as well, that black commercial farmers are killed at a rate approximating that of the whites. And the U.S. puts itself in a difficult position if, you know, we made the point on land ownership as well, that in the east of the country, my colleague James Myburd, who you are familiar with, James estimates that in the east of South Africa, more than half of land by its productive value is in black possession, but not in ownership, because the government doesn't allow a lot of black South Africans titled to the property they're occupying. So if you're concerned about property rights in South Africa and expropriation, and you can be justifiably so, remember that there are millions of black South Africans whose property remains expropriated from the east of the country, property they occupy. You want to fix South Africa's land imbalances. And you must do that in terms of the value of the land, not the acreage, because the west of the country, a lot of white-owned land is arid. If you want to really fix it, you give title to black South Africans. If you're worried about farm attacks, you've got to worry about black farm attacks and white farm attacks because they're pretty similar. And if you have a situation where a black chap arrives at the door of the American embassy and says, will you help me? I don't have title to the property I should own, and I've been brutalized by violence. What are you going to say? No, because you're not an Afrikaner. This is not an approach that is going to be successful for the U.S. if it is sincere in forming sound fraternal relations with South Africa, which we continue to maintain from just the strategic perspective. Forget about what's good and right, is extremely important for the Americans.
Yeah, it's really, really good work. And I'm sure that that pendulum's also swinging around. Obviously, there are interest groups who've got certain ideas, and we know who they are. But on the other hand, South Africans are 86% Christian. They have or claim to be 86% Christian, Christian Judeo values, et cetera, et cetera. But before I let you go, Franz, within the ANC, the factionalization now appears to be getting extreme, where Paul Mashatile is going around the country saying, kick the DA out of the government of national unity. Ramaphosa, on the other hand, is saying, keep the DA in. What happens next in this head bashing between the two of them? Or is it all just a creation of over-vivid imaginations?
Maybe this is helpful. The ANC understands that if it's rolled over by the DA now on the question of VAT, it seemed to be weak. It's one thing for your support to go to 40%, but within a year to be rolled over by the DA on such a prominent issue makes you 40% and weak. And strength, being strong, is important. And there may be some ANC people around who'd say, if we allow this to happen, the message we send to people, I mean, we've already sent the message that there isn't chaos and anarchy after we lose. We've already sent the message that the DA is not trying to restore apartheid. If we now send the message that these guys roll us over as well, that could be as damaging as when we went to 40%. And we therefore cannot allow that or afford that to happen. And it is helpful. I mean, the whole situation's absurd, but it is helpful to try and understand what the other side thinks or what a side thinks. On the other hand, the DA early on in the GNU, it's a difficult situation. It's brand new. ANC certainly takes advantage and pushes the DA to the point that it almost humiliates it on things like Bella and expropriation and the like. And it's clear what the ANC is doing. And the DA reaches a point where it says, we can't allow this. Our voters will think we've given everything away. And so we're going to pick an issue and take a stab. And they find the perfect issue and they do it on VAT and they do it really, really well. And they also realize that from their early experience that the ANC's approach to the GNU is to be an executive government. It will govern the country. And it won't tolerate any dissent from any of its partners. But that the ANC is now in a position where it's worried about whether it can pass the balance of the budget because it needs an absolute majority in the National Assembly, 201 votes, not like what it needed for the fiscal framework. It was just a majority of members present. Quorum was in place. And if the DA now helps it over the budget line, the ANC will the very next morning, or very next minute, I suppose, again behave like an executive authority. And as the some of the DA guys have said, and quite correctly so. It's you can't demand of us to go to the government just because our presence there is better than if it wasn't. The reason, and we're trying to see from their side, is we want to influence the country for the better. One ill-advised business leader said that the DA is squabbling with the ANC. It's not squabbling. It's a very important points of policy that are at stake here that will determine whether the country is ultimately successful or not, and therefore whether millions of people who labor in terrible poverty will be liberated from that or not. For some businessman to say this is a squabble and the DA should get over itself is really pathetic. And the DA realizes it needs to take a strong stance. This can, of course, be frustrating. So you can understand the positions of both sides. It may be frustrating if you live in the country to think that this kind of impasse has been reached, and does it threaten the GNU? Well, it might. But remember that in the bigger sense, the country is changing at lightning speed, from the 70% of the vote 20 years ago to poll at, on those IRR figures, 30% now. We will go to another election again. At that point, Mr. Ramaphosa won't be around. And the last reason to hold those dissident ANC voters in the party will have gone. And at that point, we'll have an election result, if depending on who the DA leader is, if they find an incredible person. The juxtaposition at the moment that Ramaphosa goes with the new DA leader, given these other trends, there's no telling who's going to win the 2029 election anymore. And after that, we'll build another GNU, and we'll do that again and again. And I think, therefore, rather than thinking the GNU is in peril and this is the end of the GNU process, we're actually learning that we're at the beginning of the GNU process. And it's a very good thing that we've done. And had that deal not been struck in May or just after May of last year, that from a sentiment perspective, consequences could have been catastrophic. You could have welded the EFF and NCAN, the ANC together. Could have been a very real trouble today. So my sense of it is that the change process continues along the same trajectory we've seen for much of the past decade. GNUs will come under pressure. You can understand what the parties are trying to do and why they're doing it. And that as you look ahead, there will be new moments, new inflection points at which GNUs will be built in circumstances where the balance of power may have shifted further. And each of these inflection points will be a moment at which the reform process can move further forward and further forward. And if we are fortunate, I think there's a bit of that needs to be involved. We'll reach a point in where a GNU is built where the two parties respect each other, because they'll have demonstrated their ability to be ruthless. And it's quite important that the DA does that now, because perhaps in sort of genteel society, there's an idea that people can just sort of be nice to each other and find common ground and mutual understanding, and that is nice, and probably how many people run their lives. It's not how the political world works. Politics is about forcing a balance of power. And for a future GNU to succeed, the partners to that must realize that the other have the capacity for power, for ruthless conduct if they need to. And demonstrating that now in the early stages is probably a necessary part of the success of the GNU in the longer term. So allow this to play out. Don't be too disheartened. It may break up, it may not, but the opportunities to reformulate that are going to be plentiful over the years ahead, and probably in situations where the balance of power politically may be very different to what it is today.
Fascinating insights, Frans. Thank you. And I suppose one thing I'm going to take out of that is these business leaders who are just worrying about their share options, butt out. The country doesn't need your interference right now. This is a process that's going through, which can be very positive. as we go into the future, the age of coalitions has begun. Frans Cronje is the chairman of the board of the Social Research Foundation and an economic and political analyst. And I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.